And right now, ladies and gentlemen, on the phone with us, Mr. Dorsey Nunn. And I do have to let you know that Dorsey Nunn is one of the founding members of All of Us or None, ending discrimination against formerly incarcerated people. Dorsey Nunn, welcome to KZSU.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. And Dorsey, you're not a stranger to these airways. We had you on a few months back talking about incarcerated people. But just to give the people a little background on what you're working on these days, on your website, it says, in the United States, more than 30 million adults have had a felony conviction. Even after completing their prison parole time, these men and women can still face many obstacles based on their former status. All of Us or None, the organization, is a national organizing campaign led by former felons themselves to challenge this discrimination. Dorsey Nunn, who's our guest now, a co-founder of All of Us or None, a longtime prisoner rights activist from East Palo Alto, put it in this way, quoting you, Dorsey, "We're denied opportunities for housing, for employment, for student loans, and for being able to volunteer in schools. We're never really admitted back into the community. All of Us or None is a project of legal services for prisoners with children, of which Dorsey Nunn is the program director." Dorsey, briefly kind of speak about what's on your heart today.
Hey, check this out. One of the things that's on my heart is probably I'm in the middle of making a transition to being the executive director of legal services for prisoners with children.
Okay.
And in the middle of that transition, it dawns on me that I could be the first formerly incarcerated felon that ever become the executive director of a public interest law office. So, like, that's one of those firsts. So, for me, what's on my heart and what's on my head is always the issue of what happened with formerly incarcerated people in relationship to the community.
Mm-hmm.
To that extent, tomorrow they got this huge case happening in San Francisco, and I think it's happening quietly, and it's a really major deal. It's talking about the 1965 Voting Rights Act and how the criminal justice system could be uncutting the 1965 Voting Rights Act by the way that they stop, search, incarcerate, prosecute, and convict people of color. And it dilutes the ability of people in the community to actually have fair elections, because so many people in the state of Washington have been locked up that were people of color, in the event that somebody wanted to run for office, that those votes wouldn't be available to community members to exercise their political will.
So are felons in the state of Washington not allowed to vote after they get out of prison?
They changed the law, but when this case first started to happen, they weren't able to vote while they were on parole or probation. And the whole question and the notion is that the fact that votes were taken away for felony conviction, was it by design to do something? And the thing that it was designed to do was to suppress and to deny black people political power. That's what it was designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So sometime when we're in this colorblind society like we claim we am right now, we still have vestiges of old stuff or unfinished business.
Mm-hmm.
So some of this unfinished business could be whether or not democracy is being disfigured by some of this old practice. The old practice that I talk about is that when somebody goes to jail or to prison, why do we take the right to vote? Do we necessarily have to? And when we start taking that right to vote, was it really about the crime, or was it about the control of political power? And there's discussions that's been recorded was that at one point, you can lose your right to vote for stealing a chicken, but not for murdering the chicken owner, because they thought initially after emancipation, what black people were going to be doing was taking things to feed themselves, and what they would do in exchange is take their political power and their right to vote.
And speaking of that felony and not the right to vote, I think the people that put George Bush in power the first time used that down in Florida, and they put a whole lot of people on the on the rolls, a whole lot of people's names on the rolls, mostly African American, some 90,000 worth, and claimed that they were all ex-felons, meaning they couldn't vote, and that's the way George Bush got in office, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If people think they're like, this don't have anything to do with us, the most visible sign was that 2000 election, and as a result of this, them disenfranchising and targeting African Americans in a particular way, what you got was George Bush, and what you ultimately got was us invested in a war.
Mm-hmm.
Us going to war. So when people think about, like, it's only a few people that they're talking about. There's numbers that I read, you know, and I'm not one of these number-crunching type of guys. But, you know, I read one of these numbers in preparing to go and just listen to this case, because that's what we're asking people to do, you know, because we recognize that, you know, everybody with an ounce of sense know that it's not necessarily true that the public don't influence judges.
Definitely.
That's not the case. You know, if that was the case, then nobody would show up when they was talking about abortion. Nobody would show up if they was talking about gay marriage. But everybody does, and the reason that they do it is because they want to show that the issue is significant to the country. On this issue about George Bush being elected was critical because there was enough stolen votes for it to be have a different outcome. So people sort of noticed it in 2000. And then we step back from it and says, well, you know, like, we're in a different era. We got Obama. Well, the process hasn't changed. The thefts of the votes still goes on. And that's where we were. The most important thing I think that people should know about this voting rights case is that it primarily targets the same people who they emancipated. Because, you know, I read one statistic that said 5.3 million people are disenfranchised, and 40% of them are African Americans.
Amazing statistics.
You know, that's a large number.
It sure is.
And they
is.
Talk about, you know, 15% of every all adult African Americans then already lost their right to vote. Those are significant numbers.
Yeah, they sure
so,
are.
So, like, to sit by silently and not show up when you have this case that could be going to the Supreme Court, and if people looked at it as an opportunity to sit there and watch history made or history denied, should go and show up. And the name of that case is going to be the Farrakhan case, and it's going to be heard and argued in court tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We had some people to assemble at 1 o'clock on the corner of Mission and 7th Street, because we think that this is a significant thing. And I'm sorry to be giving people short notice, because I know somebody's at work right now trying to think about how they get their money to give it to PG&E.
And that's no joke, too. That's no joke.
I'm a poor person, and I want my right to vote. I stay in East Palo Alto. Every vote they steal that's a black vote out of that community means something to me.
Yeah, right, definitely. In case you just tuned in, you're hearing Dorsey Nunn, co-founder of All of Us Are None, a prisoner rights activist, and All of Us Are None is the organization that helps former incarcerated folks. And what Dorsey's talking about today is a case that's been brought by incarcerated folks right now in the state of Washington. They're in jail right now, aren't they? Aren't they, Dorsey?
Yeah, they're in jail, and they can't show up.
Yeah.
So who shows up for them? Who sits there and watch this thing argue? They're not going to be able to shift the guys, you know, down here
right.
To watch this case.
Well,
so in terms of progressive thinking people, I think that we have an obligation
to show up.
To go there. Questions that I ask myself that are really serious questions is that, you know, if you had an opportunity to sit at the Woolworths counter when they were desegregating the South, would you have sit down and taken a seat and fought on the right side?
Right,
would
right.
you have been a witness to history? Would you have shown up in that way?
It,
so, like,
tomorrow,
if they have 50 seats or 100 seats in that courtroom, we should be sitting down there saying, this is unfinished business for us as a nation. You know?
Yeah. And tomorrow is one of those days, right?
I can start preaching and
Dorsey, let me back you up a little bit. Tomorrow is one of those days. Now, when you called me last night with this information, we got into a little conversation. And what's amazing about this case is, the way you explained it to me, was Mr. Farrakhan took this case to fight for the right to vote. as a felon in jail right now. And what happened was, is he won that case. And it turned everything on its head as far as legal precedent going, meaning he won the case. Therefore, it might even go all the way to the Supreme Court. And it by winning his case, Farrakhan versus Grigori, it sent shockwaves through the whole system. So what's happened is the Ninth Circuit Court out here on the West Coast, which is in charge of that kind of stuff, they're having a get-together of what would you say, nine justices tomorrow?
Nine justices is going to be taking arguments in this case.
They're going to be taking
arguments. Because initially, Farrakhan them won the case. You know, and if people thought about it, it meant that people that's incarcerated could possibly be voting. You know, while they're in prison, and you think about, like, just how many prisons that you know, in probably a several state area that includes, you know, Nevada, it includes California, it includes Washington, it includes New Mexico, it includes a wide area. What would that mean, since we are, like, 5% of the population of the world is holding 25% of the prisoners?
Yeah.
What would it mean?
Not just the Ninth Circuit. If this became law, if this became a precedent on the books, then it would become law in the whole United States. And I think that's why it sent shockwaves through the whole system. And what you said last night.
In the event that they're able to maintain, because they won once, if they win tomorrow, you can almost rest assured that the next time you hear about this case, it'll be being argued in front of the Supreme Court.
Now, when you say,
I don't suspect that they're going to go away and say, all right, we've been stealing your votes for like several hundred years now, and we're going to stop just because some guy's in prison. And, you know, it's not like the first effort it was made to secure votes. Because the first time that we did it in California, we did it for the rights to vote for people who were unsentenced people inside of a county jail or people convicted of misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
Then we sued for the ability to vote while we were on parole, and we lost because we was talking about the rights of prisoners. This case is more about the rights of the community not to have their votes stolen. So that was the twist in which the court's probably going to be looking at this case. Does it impact the community to have such large numbers of people to have their votes taken? And it might ultimately mean that people can vote, but the primary focus is on the community in terms of what do they lose politically by having people raid their neighborhoods and take people away and deny them access to the voting booth.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
parts of that question is really, 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 really significant.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? And when I think about this case, and I think about, like, what does it mean? It will mean, in the state of California, if you go around and you ask 10 prisoners, do they have former prisoners or formerly incarcerated people that's been convicted of felonies, and you ask them about their right to vote, you'll probably get 6 out of 10 saying, I can't never vote because I've been convicted of a felony, which is totally untrue. So in addition to, you know, it not being clear in D.C., it's not clear in any place in the nation. And to the most part, you ask the average person, can a person convicted of a felony ever vote? You'll get all type of people in authority saying no, and they conveying that information to a population of people who they have been in charge of and giving them that information, and most of the time it is erroneous.
So they're going to decide tomorrow, Dorsey, whether Mr. Farrakhan is going to win.
I don't think they'll get a decision tomorrow.
Oh, they're going to argue it tomorrow.
The arguments tomorrow, and they will take it under submission.
Okay, they're going to argue it tomorrow, take it under submission, come back later on, and decide. And the decision will say whether incarcerated people can vote in the Ninth Circuit of the United States.
Yes. And you know what? I think I used the wrong analogy and said that if you had a chance and when they was desegregating the South, would you sit at the Woolworths counter?
Yeah.
Probably a more accurate analysis would have been if you had an opportunity to have a seat in the courtroom and they was getting ready to argue Brown versus the Board of Education.
Okay.
Would you have wanted to sit there and watch that argument?
Okay.
Now, so I think
Now, for folks that want to help out, for them, if they show up tomorrow, they need to go to 7th and Mission in San Francisco. You said at 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, 1 o'clock we'll be gathering in the afternoon.
Okay,
tomorrow.
And then
are you going to go into court?
This
historical case.
You're going to go into court and witness what happens, witness the argument?
Witness the argument.
Okay, and who is it that's representing Mr. Farrakhan?
It's a guy by the name of Dale Ho, and he's the head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
So it's the NAACP.
That's who's going to be arguing this case.
It's the NAACP Legal Defense Fund that's representing Mr. Farrakhan, right?
Yes, that's who's going to be arguing this case.
And then against them is the state of Washington?
It's just the head of the case. But, you know, there's a number of other people, like Marcus, and there's a whole list of
incarcerated prisoners took this case.
It's a class action suit.
Okay, and so this is against the state of Washington.
It's against the state of Washington, but I would have probably framed it as not against the state of Washington. It's in the support of democracy.
Yeah, right.
Because,
but
like, you know, we got so happy when everybody was holding up those purple fingers in the place that we was committing acts of war on. Some of those purple fingers was being held up by people who were occupying prisons.
Sure.
And we can't vote here while we didn't send our family members to go and secure democracy in foreign lands.
Definitely.
When we don't have it at home.
Right.
So, like, in certain instances, we were being extremely hypocritical if people either don't know their rights or denied the access to the ballot. When we're going all over the world talking about what we want to do is to push out and make our democracy a stronger thing in the world, when we have all of these restrictions on it inside of our own borders, then we need to look at that question. So it's more than just the question of what happens in this case. It is, can America really stand for the tenets that they say is important to us?
Well, like you're saying right now, Dorsey, a lot of that goes on in the courtroom. A lot of it gets decided behind doors, and a lot of people, like you said, it's almost in secret, because if people don't know about it, they don't show up. Now, 7th and Mission is where the courthouse is. 7th Street and Mission Street in San Francisco is where the court is. Is this a federal courthouse?
It's a federal courthouse.
Okay, so it's a federal courthouse.
If you show up at 1, you will see some of us standing out there.
Right. But just in case people can't make it right at 1 o'clock. If people can't make it right at 1 o'clock, if they need to show up at the federal courthouse at 7th and Mission somewhere by 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, right?
That's when the case is going
to
be
argued. To be witnessed.
Some of us is gathering at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, gather at 1 if you can. Now, you're going to go into court and you're going to witness this. Now, you're not going to be called to testify or call for witness, but you need people out there to see what's going on, right? To put some light on this?
To put some light on this and take these arguments back to their communities.
Yes, so people can decide what they want to do. Talk to their representatives or try to figure out.
Talk to their representatives. Talk to their neighbors and says, you know, what is some of the old things that we carried over from slavery that we haven't adequately addressed yet? And one of those things could be as simple as the right to vote. You know,
yep.
We went to war claiming that we was going to war to actually make sure that democracy can be extended. You know, so it's sort of crazy in my head that on one hand I can go to the county jail in Bakersfield and be denied access to the right to vote, and at the same time somebody can be asking me for my son to send him into war to secure that right someplace else in the world.
That's pretty crazy, isn't it? Dorsey Nunn is our guest right now. He's the co-founder of All of Us or None right here in the Bay Area, a prisoner rights organization. And Dorsey, what's the website to your organization?
They can go to www.allofusnone.com and .org, I think.
Okay.
Okay, and, or they can go to Legal Services for Prisoners, and they'll get it that way.
Okay. Legal Services for Prisoners with Children.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they look that up. If they just Google it, it should pop up for them.
And Dorsey, as you're speaking to the folks out in radio land now, a lot of them might not understand. You were incarcerated at one time yourself, weren't you?
I absolutely was. And before I had the ability to cast the vote, I was 35. I got a guy in my office that I just hired who have never had the right to vote. And he's, I think, 54. So when we talk about the theft of this vote, for some of us, it's the entire lifetime they've been stealing it. When I'm out doing voter registration as a formerly incarcerated person, occasionally I show up in front of meetings like NA meetings, AA meetings, at a treatment center, and I go to register people to vote. The sad reality is that a lot of people are confused about it, or a lot of people are living in fear because they don't want to be arrested for actually exercising something that's legally theirs. So to the most part, I run into people who are in their 50s that have never had an opportunity to vote.
Now, certain states have a law saying felons can't vote. It's a state's right thing, right? It's every state
has a state's right thing, and it varies from state to state.
Right. And how can folks find out?
In California, for instance, in California, what your rights are in California to vote. If you're not in prison and you're not on parole, mm-hmm. you can vote. If you serve in the county jail sentence, and you're not on parole while you're serving that county jail sentence, you can vote. In the event that you discharge off parole, you can vote. In the event that you're on probation, you can vote. But if you went down and asked your parole agent, you went down and asked your probation officer, and you went down there and asked a whole host of people whose job it was to contain you, and you asked them what those rights are, they wouldn't necessarily give you always give you the good information. In fact, when Obama was running, I was in there trying to push Santa Clara County voter registrar's office to get registration form to everybody at Elmwood. And what we wind up doing was sending people's absentee ballots so they can register and sending them stamps so they can mail in those absentee ballots.
Hmm.
So it's like a lot of times when they say you have the right to vote, we like to feel good about ourselves and think that we stay in a progressive state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only progressive in regards to certain things. It's not progressive straight across the board. You know, and sometimes we don't want to hold the mirror up and actually look into it so we can truly see ourselves.
Definitely.
And not seeing ourselves, we might not recognize that, you know, in the state of California, we regularly steal votes, we regularly dilute the votes, we regularly misinform, we regularly do all these things that the people in Washington State is fighting for our rights right now.
Now, when you say we regularly do this, you don't mean you and the people you work with. You mean folks in the state of California or just the way the system's set up.
I'm saying the way that the system is set up.
It happens that votes get stolen.
So, like, you know, like, hold it. Everybody in the state of California, if you ask them right now, what is our Secretary of State known for? As the Secretary of State, and what makes her stand out? Because that's the person responsible for votes in California. She's responsible for pursuing and pushing the argument about the technology surrounding casting the votes. How they're going to be counted. How you going to, what machine you're going to use. If you went to her right now and says, all right, give me some accounting about everybody that's being denied access to vote who's in a jail, mm-hmm. we ain't asking for you to spend a whole bunch of money in technology. We'll write that stuff on toilet paper. Just let us vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what are those rights? You know, you got something called HAVA funds, which deals with voter education. Have you put any money into educating people when we've been, like, misinforming them for decades?
So you're talking about...
But you got an ignorant group of people walking around, and the ignorance come either from elected officials being inept at their job or being malice. And either one of us get suppression of the vote, so it really doesn't matter.
So the Secretary of State of California is the one that's in charge of administering how the vote is done.
Yeah, I think the Secretary of State, and I think locally, it's your voter registrar's office.
Yeah.
If you was to call up right now and say, like, you know, what is it that a person needs to do that to cast a ballot in Santa Clara County Jail or Redwood City County Jail? How do I make sure that my loved one or a relative, if I have one there, is able to participate in democracy, what steps do they need to take? Or if my loved one's on probation, what must they do? And if you're really, like, really curious, call 4 or 5 registrar's office and see how the information differ from one place to the next place.
Mm-hmm. And that's your county registrar of voters.
Yeah.
And there's one for each county, right?
There's one for each county. But, like, one of the things that we did, we've done at a certain point, was start surveying the major cities registrar's office. And depending on where you were, it depends on what they told you. And I'm saying that my rights in San Francisco should be no different than my rights in San Diego.
Sure. It should be statewide, and it should be uniform, definitely.
It should be uniform. So, like, when we're talking this stuff about this historical struggle that's going to be argued tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the federal building, we're saying, show up for the argument. You probably would have showed up and sit there. Some people is probably kicking themselves in the rear end right now on the things that they didn't show up for that turned out to be real historical stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so, like, I can proudly say that when I pick up my grandkids, I can proudly say this: I marched against the Vietnam War. I don't have any embarrassments about, like, where were you? Did you make your opinion known? Did you count? I counted. You know, in the event that she asked me about women's rights, I could say my opinion counted. Mm-hmm. I stood up. If she asked me about, like, what was your impression about gay rights, I got down there too.
Now, Dorsey,
where will you be tomorrow when this important case is being argued?
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you anticipate? Folks are going to show up to 7th and Mission tomorrow, 1 o'clock, gather. Then you're going to go into the courtroom, and you're just going to be witnesses sitting in the seats, right?
Just going to be witnesses.
Now, what is your hope for this? That the judges will see the gathering of people that show up, and it'll affect their decision?
I'm hoping that the judges will see that. I'm hoping that press will show up and say that this has a residency among different communities because it's important. You know, for me, it's important because, like, 2 years ago, I got to register people to vote that was never inspired to vote before.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't.
Some of us did the work. You know, so, like, when Obama ran, mm-hmm. we tried to register everybody in every county jail in the state.
Mm-hmm. How did that work out?
Like, hey, if you don't vote for anything else, this is the time to get down.
Did people vote that were in county jail? They did.
We tried to register people in the county jail. And what we found was, even though they had the right to vote, people were resisting the notion that they had the right to vote and didn't want to allow them to register.
Wow. You mean the guards?
Like, it ain't like small matter. It is an important matter.
Definitely. Voting is one of the most important things we have as a right as United States citizens, right?
Yeah, if we don't have the right to vote, how do we exercise our political beliefs or our power?
You don't. You don't. Then you live in a tyranny.
We need to have that. We need to have access to that in some real fundamental way. And if we don't have access to that, then people start acting out because they think that they don't have power to change things.
Right, right.
So this is the mechanism in which we can change things in a rational, peaceful manner. So we should give everybody that right.
Definitely.
Make sure that everybody has that right. Because I think that, I was brought up, I just start to say, I don't even know how come those people calling themselves the teabaggers.
Well, they don't.
They were fighting about taxes and a whole bunch of other stuff at first.
Right.
Or they fighting about our rights to vote. So where are they at on this issue?
Yeah, nobody asked them because nobody wants to ask them because nobody wants to get their opinion on it. The case tomorrow is Farrakhan versus Grigori. It's going to be in U.S. Federal court. The courthouse is at the corner of 7th and Mission. Dorsey Nunn and his crew are going to be gathering at 1 o'clock on the corner of 7th and Mission, getting ready to go in. And I'm sure there's probably a limit on people they're going to let in, right, Dorsey?
Yes. Yeah. So far I went over there and told them that y'all were going to show up.
Uh-huh.
So So, like, you know, I know that courtroom probably is going to get filled, and they probably pump it into other courtrooms.
And put
so
it
where
on.
Where will you be sitting at on this question of justice that's going to happen tomorrow?
Right, right, exactly. And
you know, where will you be sitting at? You know, will you be sitting at home saying, like, you know, somebody's going to tell me about it? If you don't show up, the press ain't going to take no interest.
Definitely.
If you don't show up, the next time you hear about it, it's probably some loud brother like me saying, we got the right to vote. And you're saying, oh, yeah.
If folks want to, Dorsey, if folks want to get a hold of you about this issue, how can
they? If they want to get a hold of me today, here, let me give them my organizational number.
What is it?
Area code 415.
Okay.
255.
255.
7036.
7036.
And my extension is 312.
Extension 312.
So, like, if they're interested, they can call me.
Okay. And people that are on the internet, can they hit you with an email?
They can hit me with an email. My email address is Dorsey. At prisonerswithchildren.
That's D-O-R-S-E-Y, right?
D-O-R-S-E-Y.
Dorsey.
At prisonerswithchildren, one word, .org.
.org, okay. Prisonerswithchildren.org.
Hey, and I can feel my staff pull me back into the staff meeting.
I hear you. Dorsey, I know you're busy. We're behind you 100% on this thing. If I'm gonna be airing this out for the rest of this hour out here on the airwaves, and you keep up the great work, and please stay in touch.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Have a wonderful day.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right. Take care. That's Dorsey Nunn from All of Us or None, and there's a big case going down tomorrow, and people need to show up to the court.